and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into combat sports. And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
I don't want to predict this fight, but, you know, I'm going to promise that I can give a good fight, you know, to make people happy, and I just do my best.
Pedro Fernandez.
If I can't teach you one way, I'll teach you another, but I'm going to get the job done.
Thomas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco, California, for the second hour of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, this is the Sunday edition. We start at 11 a.m. Pacific time, run for 2 hours live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 211, and a plethora of other internet outlets. Straight up, my name is Pedro Fernandez. We're here to talk boxing and mixed martial arts in the next hour. I'll bring in some astute guests. I'll bring in, of course, the boxing's PAC, Socrates Palmer. We'll talk about the takeover. The takeover has begun. I'm talking about Teofimo Lopez, right? Shocked a lot of people last night. Shocked the boxing world, of course. Took out a guy that was favored in some sports books by 4.5 to 1. Other sports books, it was 3.5 to 1. But at the end of the night, Teofimo Lopez upset the odds. He won going away. The scorecards, I think, were a bit ridiculous. Maybe not so, because I had it 8-4 in rounds, which is 116-112. But that one round, I gave it to Vasyl Lomachenko sort of out of, I felt sorry for him. I gave him a charity round. You do that when you're judging fights once in a while. You're not supposed to do it, but you just do it anyway. You felt sorry for the guy. You know, it was a close round, so I put a question mark next to it. And after 12 rounds, when I saw that question mark next to a 9-3 scorecard, I decided, okay, I'll make it 8-4. So at the end of the night, Teofimo Lopez won 8 of 12 rounds going away. His ring generalship, the effective punching, the defense. I mean, what can I say, man? He was just on top of things. Come on, clean shots, clean punching, effective punching. He was on top of that. The defense, he had that better. He did everything better than Lomachenko, even leaving the ring. Lomachenko left the ring like a big sissy. Enough. Anyway, bottom line is, you got your ass whooped. Accept it. His fans got to accept it, too. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. We'll come back with boxing's PhD Socrates Palmer. Later in the show, Shelley Williams, Who's That Lady, on Sports Byline.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Make it 12 minutes past the hour. Hour number two of the Sunday edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You might be listening to the show delayed in Anchor Podcasts or iTunes or somewhere else, but the bottom line is we are live Saturday and Sundays, 11 a.m. Pacific time, for 2 hours on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 211, and a plethora of other internet platforms. Now, looking at last night's scorecard, of course, talking about the scorecard of Teofimo Lopez prevailing by unanimous decision, of course, over a very good fighter, if not the best fighter in the world. I'm talking about Vasyl Lomachenko, although Larry Merchant sort of laid he sort of asked the question, how can Lomachenko be the best fighter pound for pound when Canelo was, and Canelo hadn't lost or anything like that? So I guess he's got a point there. But the bottom line is, the closest scorecard on that fight last night, of course, the scores were 117-111, 119-109, and 116-112. But the closest was 116-112, or 8-4 in rounds, and that was put forth by a guy by the name of Tim Cheatham. But in order for Vasyl Lomachenko to get that close, 116-112, he had to win 4 of the last 5 rounds. So what I'm trying to tell you is all three judges basically saw the same fight that I saw. A rout. I mean, just an absolute rout. So when I see a website like FightNews.com saying we had Lopez winning 115-114, giving Lopez rounds 1, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and then 12, man, all I can say is you need to be arrested for impersonating a boxing judge or even a member of the boxing media. For you to come out with that and say that that guy won those rounds is atrocious. Not only atrocious, it just shows it. You don't know what the criteria of scoring a boxing match is. Of course, I'm talking about effective clean punching, effective aggressiveness, ring generalship, and defense. And you know what? Except for a couple of rounds last night, Vasyl Lomachenko wasn't in charge of any of those four things. Now we take it to the Bronx. I'm bringing the Bronx Bomber. I'm talking about boxing's PhD, Socrates Palmer, who did pick Mr. Lopez to win fight. So I got to give you props on that one straight up.
Hey, I wish I would have bet. It was 4-1 odds. I did pick a late knockout, and You know, I figure, you know, if Lopez is going to do something historic, it should be spectacular. But nevertheless, the young man backed up his bravado. He is, any cliche you want to say, he is the new face of boxing. He is the baddest man, certainly in Brooklyn. Big win for Brooklyn. It's been a while since they've come on top in the big stage.
Since the Dodgers? Impressive. Since, has it been that long since the Brooklyn Dodgers or what?
Yeah, I mean, Brooklyn fighters tend to fall short in the big spots, you know. It's been a while since Mike Tyson, but and Riddick Bowe. It was a great fight. It really was. I think it lived up to the hype. I had said yesterday that it was going to be maybe the Matador and the Bull, but it turned out to be more like the Tortoise and the Hare. Lomachenko slept through the first six rounds, and, you know, he looked at his watch and, oh, snap, I'm in a fight. And it was just too late. You know, I think he ran out of rounds. I saw the strategy of trying to take the younger, inexperienced fighter deep into the fight, hoping that he gassed out, but Lopez responded. You know, he fought those championship rounds like a true warrior, a true champion. I mean, he was there, maybe, you know, I've heard people say that the scorecards were a little crazy. You know what? At the end of the day, the right guy won. I had it maybe a little closer, 8-4, 7-5, Lopez at best.
Time out. We're not caring. Your card doesn't matter. What did Dad have it? What did Socrates Palmer Sr., how did he see the fight? We want to know how the godfather of the family saw the fight, the patriarch. Mike, tell us.
My dad goes to the same optician that you go to, and he had it 9-3, just like the way you had it. You know, he thought Lopez was the boss, clearly, you know. And that's the beauty of boxing, that, you know, you watch it, and we all come up with our, you know, with our point of views. I've seen a couple of people say that it was a draw. I don't think so. I've even heard one person say that they thought Lomachenko won. I mean, there's no way. You know, the right guy won. I think there probably will be a rematch. I think they probably wait till they could get a live gate in there. That was the only thing missing, that, that coronation didn't have a live audience in front of it. I think it would have been.
It didn't need it. If there was one fight that didn't need it, it didn't need it.
That is true. That is, you know, strange enough, I didn't miss the crowd. That is right. That is, ESPN did a good job with the production and everything. But, you know, it's something special when, you know, when those fireworks go off, when they, you know, they announce in the new, it was just real an organic good feel, I think, at the end of the night. And some, you know, that one man that's undefeated is Father Time. And I think we saw Lomachenko look, you know, a little bit, but one of the older 32-year-olds you're going to see in boxing last night.
I thought he looked old, too. And plus, when he reverted the button like that, you know, I butted Keith Rucker because he kept holding me one time. That was the only time I ever butted anybody or tried to in 52 fights. But I've had guys try to butt me, and it ain't pretty. These guys are billy goats are coming at you. And he pulled a couple billy goat last night that were straight out of a chicken spit move.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, a lot of people thought that Lopez was going to have to be the guy to resort to, you know, borderline dirty tactics. And no, it was Lomachenko that, you know, that dug deep into his veteran playbook. And there was I thought one of the headbutts, that the one that did not cause a cut, I thought definitely had the intention of, you know what, if I don't get you with this left, I'm going to catch you with the top of my head. He was hitting and holding. He really roughed him up. There's a couple of moments that I thought Mora jumped in a little too soon.
Like when there was 12 seconds left in the fight, he jumped in for that cut. Anyway, straight up, listen, you sent me a clip this week, and it was, of course, about Ryan Garcia, and I want to air that right now.
Nobody hurt me, but I know who hurt you, bum, goofy. Remember this? Rolly Romero f***ed you up in sparring. Is this you, Ryan Garcia? Is this you getting touched up? Is this you bleeding? Is this you running? Because it sure the f*** looks like you. Your promoter, Oscar De La Fishnet, don't even believe in you. Do you want proof? Here you go.
Ryan, ready for tape?
No. Oscar, I know first I can be
f***ed. Tank is a beast, and you're an Instagram thot. Remember that.
Listen, Ryan Garcia wants to fight you. We know the f*** he don't. He gonna get f***ed up.
If Ryan Garcia can beat Rolly, I give him 200,000 cash.
Are you ever gonna pick up that 200 from Floyd? Or do you want to stay ducking because you know you got little boys and little girls as your main fan base? You a bum.
What can I say other than Ryan Garcia was a bit dressed up there? He was staggering all over that ring and sparring. They were using the big gloves, the whole nine yards. Of course, Floyd Mayweather's offering him an extra $200,000 to fight Raleigh. What's happening with Ryan Garcia? He's going to take on Luke Campbell, but does this sort of put a kink in the armor of Ryan Garcia, or is it just bring me back down to earth on Ryan Garcia?
I mean, you've seen it. Guys in sparring sometimes have bad nights. I mean, we remember the famous video of Spadafora smacking up Floyd, you know, in sparring, mm-hmm. and I don't think it diminishes what Floyd, you know, went on to become. I don't think much of Rolly Romero, so that's why I'm not going crazy about the highlight reel from sparring. I think Romero got a gift his last time out, and mm-hmm. definitely if he didn't have that TMT promotional machine behind him, he doesn't get that decision. I think Ryan is very good, but what we saw last night, it's almost like it's a different league, man. Like, he's not ready for that Lomachenko, Lopez. Same thing with Devin Haney. They're just that level below.
What are you talking about? Devin Haney is a two-time email champion.
Yeah, and Teofimo, and in the press conference he kept egging him on. I mean, it's great for boxing. I love it, you know. And if you thought Teofimo's pops was, you know, was a trash talker before, can you imagine him now going forward?
Wow.
And that could be the only thing that could derail that monster, you know, if the egos get too big, you know, between him and his dad.
You know what? I don't see that. I'm going to say these guys are going to be I'm hoping they're the exception to the rule, of course. And that's another thing I was talking about with Hector earlier today, is that, you know, Shane Mosley came back had his father in the corner for a long time. Roy Jones did. But for the most part, it was not so common. But now you got Danny Garcia and, of course, this kid and Felix Trinidad Sr. and Jr. So it seems fathers are becoming more the trainers. And here's the problem with fathers becoming the trainers, is that they don't know any median, I think. And sometimes they let it go too long, or they cut it off too short because they're emotionally involved. Real quick, let me know.
Yeah, you said it best. It's sometimes you get clouded. At the end of the day, that is your son. But we have seen, especially recently, Lomachenko last night. The Porters are a good, successful fighting family. Gary Russell's father is involved in his career. So mm-hmm. it really depends on the individual. And, you know, and as a parent, Pedro, you could tell me this, there's nothing that brings you more joy than seeing your own succeed, you know, and vicariously, I guess, are they living through their sons? Maybe, but their sons are not there without them. You know, they're the ones that took him to the gym the first time. So there's that level of respect. And, of course, it depends the circle you keep around you. You know, who do they have in their ear listening to what
last question before I roll to a break here. Edgar Berlanga, 15-0, 15 wax, is Edgar the real deal, or is he being fed the right guys?
He's being fed the right guys, absolutely. Edgar, you know what? I'm not going to be a hater. The kid is 15-0, but he's fought stiffs. I mean, the guy, he's still, even if you break down that fight, even his footwork is a little off. He's full of a lot of, piss and vinegar, but I'm still not sold. He needs to show me something as a live opponent.
Boxing's PhD, telling it like it is. Don't forget, he appears exclusively on the Saturday edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, Saturday, 11 a.m. Pacific time. Boxing's only PhD, Socrates Palmer from the Bronx. Thank you so much, Mr. PhD.
Thank you, my brother.
You are
tuned
to Ring
Time.
You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Next up, Shelley Williams. Who's that lady? We'll find out.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Haven't seen Ron Isley just a year ago. Let me tell you, he still rocks and rolls 6 years after coming into the business. I'm talking about Ronald Isley of the Isley Brothers, of course, touring until the COVID-19 epidemic took place. Straight up, my next guest is quite a young lady, a superstar in the world of boxing. She's in everything. She's been commissioner. She's in the National Boxing Hall of Fame. What can I say other than introduce that lady is Shelley Williams. How are you today, young lady?
Oh, hello, Pedro. So good to speak with you. Long time no see, old friend.
Long time no see. Of course, we used to see each other all over the place. I got to ask you, you know, Hector Camacho, I mean, I love the Macho Man. He called my wife one time when my wife wouldn't let me talk to my daughter on the phone. I mean, he got on the phone when he heard me screaming at her. And he did stuff like that. I remember the other time he was all coked out in Bayamon, Puerto Rico, and he didn't want to come down for a fight. And we had an arena full of fans. And of course, if he didn't come down, this was a Harold Smith card. If he didn't come downstairs, I wasn't getting paid. So where I was in the arena, I had to go back to the hotel and beg him to come downstairs. Finally, he did come downstairs. He went off and fought Jorge Vaca, so I got paid and got to go home and feed my kid. But the bottom line is, Harold Smith, Hector Camacho. I'll first ask you about the Harlem Heckler, Hector Camacho. What was he like to be around?
You're talking about Hector or Harold?
Hector. Let's go with Hector first.
Hector. Oh, Hector was the best, you know. I don't know if you remember Prince Ranch Resort, which was a boxing training camp up here in Las Vegas by Mount Charleston for several years, and Hector had spent many camps with us out there, and he was a handful, and there was never a dull moment. You never know what to expect, but he was always so full of love and had a hug and a kiss and a smile for everybody. I respected him so much. He had his demons that haunted him, but he always was about the love.
Cocaine. It was the, I mean, I wanted, it just, you know, and it was so blatantly obvious. I mean, it just was. His skills started to diminish. He went into a safety first fighter and things like that. And, you know, he's not the only guy. I saw an expose on Sugar on Julio Cesar Chavez this week in which he went into an hour and a half admission where he said he was hooked on coke like all throughout the 30s, like when he was from 30 years old to when he was 40 years old. He was hooked on coke. He was cocaine. He would go home and get high in his house the entire time. Anyway, Mount Charleston. Johnny Taco used to run me up that hill.
I know. That hill was brutal. Mm-hmm. Brutal. That's where we had it there because these fighters, they forget sometimes about that road work. Got to do your road work.
Shelly, that wasn't even fair, though. That was torture. That was absolute torture.
I know.
It was cold. I mean, here's what's up. And the thing is that you could usually say, well, screw it. I'll just slow down, right? Well, not as cold as it was. You had to keep going.
Oh, yes, you did. Yes, you did get icicles on your eyelashes. I remember Bernard Hopkins did a camp with us out there, and I remember taking him up there and telling him, okay, now, look, Bernard, if you can just do these hills, you can beat Trinidad. He looked at me like, really? Really? And I said, yes, and he did, and he did.
Yeah.
That was just such a fun part time in my life to be nose to nose and hand in hand with these wonderful champions. They were so respectful and so nice, and I was so young and early in the sport and was totally clueless, but they were nice to me anyway.
Okay. But you worked with just about everybody. I mean, Bramble, Livingstone Bramble. You know, Bramble came on the scene and he flashed off the scene real quick, but he beat Ray Mancini and he had a position to move into superstardom, and he just missed that step, didn't he? He was one step short.
You know, he did. Bramble never did have an easy life in boxing. He sure, certainly didn't. He's still here in Las Vegas, and he's hanging in there. You know, he, like so many fighters, are suffering from brain trauma and those terrible results as a result after life in boxing, after the lights go down and all the adulation is gone, and they're stuck with their brain damage, but there's nobody around to write them a check.
Okay, now here's what's up. I was going to save the next segment for the brain damage with you. So, I mean, the pugilist dementia, I promise you we're going to go into that in depth. Now,
okay.
Eddie Futch, I think, is an anniversary just passed. His 20th anniversary of his passing just took place. Of course, you worked with Eddie Futch. Eddie used to tell me stuff that he didn't tell other people, and of course, I think he didn't mind me saying this stuff after he passed, but he was such a confidant to an extent with me that I won't tell people even though he's passed on what he said. You know what I mean? That's how close I took him. And I got a big mouth, so if I'm willing to say that about Eddie was special.
Well, Well, you know, I would take Eddie to the fights, and Eddie at that point was, you know, pushing 90,
mm-hmm.
and people didn't understand that he was a slight man anyway. He was small.
Mm-hmm.
He was a huge man of heart, but of stature, he was small, and people would come up and grab, pick him up and throw him around, and they were just so happy to see him. But when you walked up, it was just like clear the way. You know, here comes Pedro, and Eddie received you,
right.
And I never knew. I never had to tell you, don't do that.
Well, you're almost bringing me to tears here, because I will tell you, the last time I saw him, he said to me, I said to him, he was in a wheelchair, and we were outdoors in Las Vegas. Some fight Goosen was throwing. Let me get it together here. Some fight Goosen was throwing outside of the main strip, and he came in a wheelchair.
The Red Rock.
And Eva Futch was pushing him in a wheelchair. So I went over to him out of concern, and I leaned over and I talked to him in his ear, and I said, Godfather, are you okay? Are you okay? I mean, the wheelchair, are you okay? He goes, yeah, it was just a long ways to walk. He goes, and then he grabs me by the arm. He goes, but I'm losing a little mentally. In other words, he said that to me, because and when he was willing to confide in me like that, I said to myself, you know what? All the other stuff he's told me in his life about this boxer and that boxer, and probably I could say it now that he's passed away, that's going to be forever sealed. Eddie Futch was, you know, when we went to his funeral, Berry Gordy was there. He trained Berry Gordy.
Yes, he did train Berry Gordy.
And Berry Gordy still going. Berry Gordy's still going at 91 years old.
Yeah. Berry Gordy had given Eddie Futch a gold Rolex watch, and then he had it engraved in the back, and Eddie wore that every single day, come hell or high water, he wore that watch. And we had that watch presented to Joe Frazier. Do you remember that?
Yep.
There just wasn't a dry eye on the house. I'm just so glad that we had hit that last birthday party for him, because, you know, when you're at that age, you just never know, as healthy as he was. You just never know. It was my greatest honor in all of my things that I've done in this sport to be with Eddie Futch every day and to get to listen to Eddie Futch stories. He was such a wise man, and I learned so much,
you know,
about life and about boxing.
You know, Peyton Scherer was 94. Peyton Scherer, of course, the guy that put together the Buster Douglas Mike Tyson upset, but he was 94. And I talked to him like a week before he died, and he was fine. But then a week later, he was gone. Anyway, let's talk about the O.J. Simpson trial. You were an assistant to Robert Shapiro, and you know, Marsha Clark and Christopher Dodden were sleeping together. And you know what they missed as far as evidence was concerned in that fight? I found out later by reading. You know what they missed? A bloody thumbprint on the gate of O.J. Simpson. They missed it. They missed that. Now, that would have been, don't you think that would have been sort of like a clincher?
You think?
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, if it wasn't enough. Anyway, bottom line, you've been all over there. What was Shapiro like to work around?
Oh, Bob was great. He was very, very good to me. It was, I always seem to work places where it's never a dull moment, but I guess I kind of thrive on that. He was a real boxing aficionado. He had a gym in his home, and he was always down at Wild Card Boxing Gym with Freddie Roach and the boys. He was a lot of fun to work for.
Okay.
I knew Bob 10 years before that. I worked with him, but not for him. So when I moved back to L.A., I just called him, and he said, come on down, come back to work. I went, okay.
Okay.
It was good.
I got a break in about a minute and a half. Harold Smith. Tell me about Harold Smith.
Oh, Harold Smith, God rest his soul. I read what you wrote that he died, and my heart was crushed. I like you, was at that fight in Puerto Rico with Camacho. And, you know, talk about crazy. Everything was just crazy about Harold Smith. But he, again, had a big heart. Who knows what really happened with regard to the Wells Fargo debacle? I don't know.
Oh, wait. I'll tell you after the break. I'll tell you after the break. We're going to go to a break, of course. Shelley Williams will stick around with us. We'll talk about pugilistic dementia. Of course, the suffering of concussions in boxing and combat sports in general. We'll get into that in depth after I pry her on a couple other two things before we get to that. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide on Sports Byline.
Dance upon a string, and if she'd want to bring, I would give her anything if she would just do.
I'll knock him on the early rounds, but like I said, he brings excellent condition and he's determined. Why didn't you go after him to try to knock him out when you knocked him down early in the third round?
I said, why get callous if I've been training for 2 months?
Here's the knockdown. Describe it to us as you see it.
Well, like I told Jimmy, the 1-2 with you on the gentleman all the time. But I wasn't going to get overexcited and play myself cheap. I said, I'll knock him out early if it happens. If not, if it's necessary, I'll go 12 rounds, and I did.
Did you go to school, so to speak, on what happened to Rosario when he knocked him down and then got knocked out himself?
No, because I knocked down a lot of fighters that still took my time. I'm just getting seasoned through every fight, and I'm pound for pound, I'm the best fighter pound for pound in the world. Bring him on! Bring him on! Mancini, I don't respect your opinion. Come on, baby, so I can knock you out.
Well, who are some of the fighters?
And Bernard Williker, you could get some, baby. You could get some too, Brian Boone. Sorry, Holmes, all your come on with it, baby. Yeah, buddy.
Let's
hear from you, Larry.
What about Aaron Pryor?
Aaron Pryor, come on with it, baby. I got faker than you. You bounce back. I know you. Come on, baby. Come on with it. It's my show time.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Hey, I saw a kid in Minneapolis fight once. In Cincinnati.
Little East Bay Soul coming back from the break. Check out their music at eastbaysoul.com. Of course, an original member of Tower of Power, Greg Adams runs East Bay Soul. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. 37 years now. Your inside look at the world of boxing and MMA. On the line from Las Vegas, Nevada, Shelly Williams. Let me tell you some things about Shelly. She's been inducted to the National Boxing Hall of Fame in 2016. She's been inducted to the International Women's Boxing Hall of Fame in 2020. And, of course, she's done things like Riddick Bowe's PR stuff and Ken Norton's PR stuff and, like, lots of guys. Ernie Shaver's been on this show in the past. And real quick, before we get into the pugilist dementia, I'll tell you a good little story about Ken Norton and Muhammad Ali, myself, Larry Holmes, and George Foreman. Harold Smith has got me doing, well, you know, Harold's got me being the MC, the chauffeur, you know, Harold's got you doing 1,000, you know what I'm trying to say, doing 1,000, and yep. Plus you're doing radio interviews and the whole time. I mean, Harold puts you to work. If you got talent, Harold will work it. Anyway, so we're putting
together. Multitasking, the king of.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yes, you were props. You were nothing but props in Harold's world. Anyway, so he puts together this presentation where the four heavyweight champions, as I said, Ali, Holmes, Foreman, and Norton, are going to appear in Sacramento, California for a car dealership. And the car dealership paid Harold like $150,000. They ended up going bankrupt on it. But they paid him $150,000 to pull this together. So anyway, so I get up there, and there's animosity in the green room. And it's Ken Norton. And Ken Norton's really being a real turd with Ali. He's like showing him, you know, ugly faces and growling at him, this and that. And I'm saying to him, you know, Ken, man, let's just try to chill on this. And he goes, I'll beat him up. And all that kind of stuff. So Ken was really a bit boorish.
That was Kenny.
He was being a bit boorish, okay? He goes, man, well, let me tell you, he will last best. Anyway, so he's going through his little emotional ordeals, and I've got these guys on some stairs. We're on a set of stairs, and we're going to open up this door, and I'm going to lead them out onto the stage. Okay, this dice, they're going to sit down, and four microphones in front of them, the whole nine yards. So I guess we're on the steps for about 3 or 4 minutes, and it's really getting tight, man. I mean, Norton's just being an a-hole to say anything less, okay? So finally, Ali looks over at him, and he says, Ali rips his hand on his shoulder. He goes, you know, champ, that last fight, you might have got the better of it that night. And so what happens with Ken? Yeah, so Ken Norton shuts the F up in a heartbeat and starts crying. He starts crying right then and there.
Crying?
Tears start coming out of his eyes. He never thought he would hear that out of Ali's mouth. Don't you understand? Mm-hmm. That's what he lived for. He lived for Ali telling him, you won that fight.
Yes.
And he lived for that. And that was his moment of reckoning, per se. And we went out on stage, and he was the nicest little guy you can. He was docile from that point on. I mean, I'm telling you, sort of like he got everything. For 30 years he had screamed, 40 years he had screamed that he had been robbed against Ali in that third fight. And Ali sort of patted him on the back, said, you know, champ, you might have got the better of it that night. I saw that showed a lot of class on Ali, and he showed a lot that showed how emotional that Ken Norton was.
You notice he said might have and not did. You notice?
Yeah.
Kenny was an emotional guy. He had a very, very a childlike heart. I loved him and I miss him. He Anyway, don't get me started on that.
Okay, I can go into the all your other accolades, but man, your resume so long would like take me 2 hours. Let's talk about concussions in the world of boxing. Some people say that, you know, you get concussions of sparring and you don't know it and this and that. And then I had 52 amateur fights fought off and on for 19 years. So I only remember the one concussion I ever got was when Ernie Chavez spanked me in the National Golden Gloves in Las Vegas at the Showboat Hotel. He hit me so hard that when I hit the ground, my right ear hurt. And he hit me on the left ear.
Well, I can't get by your new shavers, huh?
Oh, yeah, anyway.
That'll take a mortal man out in a New York minute, won't it?
Yeah, well, this is how hard he hit. So I tell Meldrick Taylor this. I'm doing a Meldrick fight up in Sacramento, California. I'm doing some telecasts. So I go to Meldrick before the fight. I said, look, man, this guy Ernie Chavez can really punch with the right hook. I mean, he hit me so hard, I didn't know what happened. And he's going, oh, blood, something like that, right? So after the fight, there he is with a towel on his face going, hey, who was it that told me this dude could punch? Yeah, and so Ernie Chavez could punch. But let's talk about pugilistic dementia. Can you explain to the listeners what it is?
It's just a traumatic brain injury suffered by professional boxers. And getting back to what you were talking about, Eddie Futch and the legacy of Eddie Futch, and I think that we all know part of his legacy is stopping the fight against Muhammad Ali at the very end of the fight. Joe was furious because he knew his fighter had taken enough, if not a little bit too much. That will go down in history. So the moral of that to me is it's so important for a young fighter coming up to vet the man who holds his life in his hand prior to making him his trainer. You have to trust this man that doesn't throw you in the ring like a pork chop for 10%. That's such an important thing, and for these young kids, know the business end of boxing and know who really has your back and really doesn't have your back, because the ravages are heartbreaking. And being here in Las Vegas, being in the fight game for 30 years, I see it every single day. It's hit me on a personal level with people that were very, very close to me, and it just makes you want to cry every day. But we do here have the Lou Ruvo Center for Brain Health that's doing a wonderful job in trying to combat this disease. The thing is, you have to have, these fighters have to have somebody as their ambassador to take them, pick them up, take them, bring them there so that they can get their help. Because if they don't, it's not a pretty picture for them for the rest of their life, because the people don't care anymore. They're no longer a commodity. They're no longer making them money, and they're just put aside, and it's heartbreaking, Pedro. You've seen it.
You know, I'll tell you what's heartbreaking is I get emotional when I think about some of these guys, and I got to stay straight here, but Hedgeman Lewis, every time I saw Hedge in Vegas, baby, when I was making money, I always slipped him a $100 bill. You know, I always did.
I know you did.
It was always, it was just part of the game. And every time I saw him, I walked to him, and not that he was ever expecting him, but I walked to him, and I always made sure that he got the $100 bill, because I thought that boxing had did him wrong.
It had done him wrong. He was one of Eddie Futch's very, very favorite fighters, and he was managed by Ryan O'Neal, who took very good care of him as well. But still, you know, 30 years later, where is everybody? That's the thing.
More.
And losing Hedgman was so sad. You just wonder, well, what got him, COVID? Or did
No. Hedgman Lewis passed away we'll call him Alzheimer's. You know, we'll call it Alzheimer's. Bottom line is, he was in bad shape.
It has so many names, this malady. It has so many names. But I just can't say enough. Kids, vet your trainer. Just have some guy throwing a towel over his shoulder saying, hey, kid, let me teach you how to fight. No. It's better to get one of the old school trainers. Daycare.
You know, but there ain't too many of those old school guys left. And when I think of old school, I think of Jerry Quarry. And you know that Jack Quarry was his father. And I watched him spar in 1967 after him losing a 10-round decision to my boxing mentor, Eddie Machen. In Los Angeles, the Olympic Auditorium, Jerry and team came up to San Francisco to spar with Eddie Machen to try to learn some stuff, I guess. Anyway, the bottom line was he sparred with no headgear and they were brutes. So some of the old school guys are a little bit too crude. I thought that Jack Quarry was rough on his kids.
A lot of them are. Well, it worked for Teofimo, didn't it? I mean, the father was brutal on him, but it seemed to have worked. And by the way, big props and congratulations to the new pound-for-pound king. So proud of that kid. I don't know what to do with myself.
You know, I remember when my mother...
He's walking right up those stairs of boxing elite and royalty. He really is. Watch him. He's only 23. He's a baby.
Yeah.
To have that level of maturity. I hope he gets in, gets out. You know, gets in, gets all the glory he needs, and gets out, and raises his children down the line, you know?
You know, I was fortunate enough to have good trainers, but I also had my mother. She saw me lose my first fight because I got tired. You know what she said to me? You're not going to embarrass me again. You're not going to get tired. So she became my running coach. No, she was a track star in high school until smoking took over. So she became my running coach, and there was my mom honking the horn, smoking cigarettes while I was doing road work.
It worked.
Yeah, it did.
You had somebody in your corner that cared. Another thing I want to bring up is know your matchmaker. Know your matchmaker. I recently noticed that BoxRec is putting the amateur record down as well as the professional record when it comes time to manage a fighter on this end or be a matchmaker on the other end. That's so important that to ask the question, you know, all managers ask the question, what was the opponent's amateur career? Sometimes these kids are a pro debut pending. Yeah, they've had 100 amateur fights and won all but three. And then your kid is put in there like a pork chop and could get killed. Ever since this happened to Greg Page, when Greg Page died, he lived, of course, another 6 or 7 years after his brain injury.
Yeah.
That day, I had close to 200 maybe or so fighters, men and women fighters, on a registry, and I was doing matchmaking. That day, I closed the book. I stopped. I never did it again. I couldn't.
You know, I saw Greg at that thing we did with him and Gerald McClellan up there in, I think, Rockport, Illinois, and that was tearful. But you know what? Greg was joking always to the end, and Greg was a lot of fun to be around. May he rest in peace. Hey, another guy that I came in contact with, that you know, is Cuba Gooding Sr. Okay, I know both Cuba Sr. and Cuba Jr. Now, Cuba Sr. is doing his thing over at Yoshi's over in Oakland, California, and I know the security guys, so they're letting me in to talk to all these guys, blah, blah. So we're talking. He wants to talk about boxing and, of course, his son. So then when I interview his son, I said, you know, your father spent about 15 minutes on stage with a one-hour show talking about you, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, all he wanted to talk about was his father and boxing. So Cuba Gooding Sr. was a character.
He was a character. I mean to tell you, a bona fide, certified character. Oh, he would sometimes have to say, take it down a notch, Cuba. You're hurting my ears. He just got so passionate. He'd be talking about making a peanut butter sandwich, and he'd be screaming it. That was Cuba. God rest his soul. Yes, sir.
I went
to a fight with him one time. Oh, Lord have mercy. What a night.
If I had to put you on the spot in 60 seconds, what was the greatest time you had in boxing?
I'd have to say the quiet time I spent with the late, great Eddie Futch. There's just no other like him.
Wow. You know what? You ended the show on a perfect note. You really did. You're a champion, Princess, in a whole lot of ways. I respect you like I respect few people. And that means whether it's in boxing or the world at large. So I wish you continued success, good luck, and anything I can do for you, just reach out, okay?
Thank you so much for having me on. Much love to you, Pedro. Bye-bye now.
The great Shelley Williams, folks. The diva. Who's that lady? You just found out on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Crying. You say you even thinking about dying? Well, before you do anything rash, dig this. Everybody plays a fool sometimes. There's no exception to the rule. Listen.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
If you ever saw Shelley Williams, you want to get next to her. So I thought that was pretty cool. We came back with this tune. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing. What a warm lady. She just is. I mean, she just sunshine 24/7. That's Shelley. There's no doubt about that. I remember we were in Antigua and for that Tim Witherspoon fight, and the started raining, and we were in this outdoor arena, and the wind started blowing the lights over the ring around. And, you know, I mean, the lights are going back and forth. A couple of light bulbs are popping from the rain. I kid you not, that was a bit of a weird night. It was the ring announcer, I think, and the color commentator, of course, as I said, working for Harold Smith. This day in boxing history, of course, Tommy Hearns was born in Memphis, Tennessee in 1958. Wish the Hitman the best. Of course, the four-division world champion. Richie Sandoval, born in 1960, of course, down in Southern California. Also today in boxing history, wow, Michael Nunn knocked out Donald Curry to retain the title. Of course, that was in Paris, Illinois, I believe, in 1990. And in Atlantic City, New Jersey, I saved Tommy Morrison's life. Yeah, I know he would later die of AIDS, but I saved his life on this day in 1990 when I jumped up from my seat. I was eight rows from the ring, and I ran across up to the ring and yelled at Larry Hazard, the athletic commission director, to stop the fight, stop the fight, stop the fight. That's how many punches that Tommy Morrison had taken from Ray Mercer unanswered before, you know, the fight was stopped, because Hazard stopped the fight. The referee, Tony Perez, wanted no part of it. But if you look at that video, you see me running from across the ring from Hazard, getting his attention, and he stopped the fight. So Tommy Morrison, I saved his life. He would later go on to die from HIV and complications from that. But straight up, he was sort of a fun guy to be around. A bit reckless, no doubt about that. That's what led to his demise, but he was a bit fun to be around. Of course, the Duke was the alleged grandson, something like that. John Wayne. Straight up, you've been tuning to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. I want to thank the Godfather Larry Merchant. I want to thank Socrates Palmer. Teofimo Lopez, the takeover is taking over. There's no doubt about it. Takeover is here. Check us out. Our podcast at anchor.com. Ring Talk Live Worldwide. The podcast at anchor.com. Until next time, we kicked some ass today, as did Teofimo Lopez.